You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
John, seriously, this is a very important... This is called The Brian Callen Show for a reason. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know before we get into John Lovitz, I'm going to be, if you like stand-up comedy, I'm going to be at Donnie B's in Springfield, Illinois, October 4th and 5th. Then I'll be at the Houston Improv October 11th, 12th, and 13th. And then hold your hats, Helium in Buffalo features me as the headliner October 17th, 18th, and 19th. And then I'm in Calgary the 24th, 25th, 26th. John, I don't play out to huge theaters like you do.
I'm in clubs.
You are?
I'll be at Comedy Works.
When?
This weekend.
That. Where is that? In Denver?
Yeah, but there's one in town and there's one I know. About 20 minutes out.
I do the one in town. I love that place.
I do the one out of town.
Oh, really?
Fancier crowd.
Because your comedy is fancier. That's why.
You've never seen the one out 20 minutes away. It's like new.
But that's the Improv. Right?
No, Comedy Works.
Really?
She has two clubs. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They put you up in a very nice fancy condo and it's in a mall.
Well,
how much restaurant?
How much do they pay you for one night? What do you get usually?
Me in a club?
Yeah. Like.
Well, you know, you get a guarantee versus piece of the door.
Like $1 million.
No. Like $40 million.
That's a lot of money, John.
It sounds like a lot of money. But after taxes, it's not as much.
But even after taxes, it's $20 million.
But then you have thank you, half, and correct. And then you have, flights.
I know, but do you have
food, beverage, pet care?
Pet care, I understand. Do you have you came here with a tiny dog, which is very aristocratic of you. Do you have any other animals?
Yeah.
Oh God.
I have a couple of cats.
Big jungle cats or?
No. Well, one's kind of big. They're all rescue cats.
Oh. You're a humane man. John, not you're true. Kind of a legend. I will say this. I'm not joking.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Yes.
I don't know.
Of course, but it's wonderful to have you on the Brian Callen Show.
I'm just trying to keep the career going.
Well, people in this studio, like Hunter Motz over here, who's like really smart, by the
people
way.
People in this studio, there's you, me, Hunter, and the
and
engineer.
Rina. And Rina.
But the people in this
here.
Studio.
they're downright starstruck.
All, besides myself and you, the two people in here, the thousands of people, and there's you, me, and two others.
The sea. We're doing this in the Staples Center, ladies and gentlemen, live. Hunter was very excited, and Hunter's very smart. Hunter went to Harvard. You got his bio. What'd you get a degree in?
Biochemistry.
Yeah, biochemistry.
You went to Harvard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went to Harvard.
You did?
High school.
Hello. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley.
You did?
Yeah, Encino and Tarzana. Mm. But it's funny when you grow up there, you never say, I'm from Los Angeles or I'm from LA. You just, where are you from?
From the Valley.
And then everything else is over the hill, and
it's
people
so
over the hill go, I never go to the Valley.
Yeah.
Like, well, good.
Well,
until I was like 16, and then got a driver, you got a driver's license, and my friend David, I grew up with David Kudrow, who's Lisa Kudrow's older brother. So she's like my little sister. But anyway, we're all from Tarzana, so we'd go, quote, over the hill. And then back then, Westwood was like packed, thousands of people every weekend. You'd wait in a line for a movie for like an hour and a half, and it was a
wow.
whole scene. And but we would drive around Westwood for hours. It was so boring. And David would just go, "Come on, John, we're driving." And in his Honda, and it was neat that he had a car, but I was just like, "David, can we just do something? I'm so bored. We're just cruising."
Just cruising for chicks.
Not even that, just cruising.
God, with David Kudrow.
Yeah.
In Westwood.
I mean, if it was
who's
Lisa
an excellent
Kudrow,
neurologist if you need a doctor.
Is he a neurologist?
Yes.
It's a successful family. She's so talented. But wait, when did you decide to be a comic?
Well, I saw Woody Allen. I actually, from 7 to 15, I wanted to be like a baseball player, like Willie Mays. And I saw the Al Jolson story with Larry Parks when I was 7, and I saw James Cagney, Yankee Doodle Dandy. So I thought I wanted to, like, I used to imitate Al Jolson when I was 7.
Really?
And I wanted to, you know, do musicals and tap dance and sing, Mommy! Yeah. But I saw Woody Allen's movie, Take the Money and Run.
Great movie,
when I was, his first movie when I was 13, with David, and we were dying laughing. We were going, this is the guy.
That was the time, that movie was the first time I ever saw my father dying laughing. And he kind of taught me, like, I was like, this must be very funny. I was very young. I was like, this must be really funny. But that's, I remember that movie. It's probably the first movie, the first comedy I remember. And then I remember Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know. But those were the two seminal
movies. Saw that and go, I want to be a comedian like Woody Allen. And then I saw the movie Lenny with Dustin Hoffman about Lenny Bruce when I was 16. And I'd never heard of Lenny Bruce. I didn't know who he was. So I saw the movie, and it was such a great movie. And I said, I want to hear the real guy. This was a real guy. So I went to the record store, and I bought Lenny Bruce's albums. And then I saw, it said, an album said Woody Allen, The Nightclub Years, 1964 to 1968. And I didn't know that he'd been a stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
So I got that album, and I played it with David. I go, David, Woody Allen has a stand-up album. So you got to hear this. It's so funny. And we'd play it in his room, and we were just like dying laughing.
Well, he could do it now. You know, comedy, they say, is dated. He could do that set that I know you're talking about. He could do it now and crush.
And then I would do their routines in my college dorm. I went to UC Irvine. I did plays in high school. But in my dorm, they had it was a fine arts dorm, and they have like a talent night. So anyway, you'd do something. So I would do their routines.
Wow.
And I would do I shot a moose and I was down south. And,
you did like?
Me,
like
yeah, Woody. Exactly.
I'd write
it out on cards. So his voice would go up, up and down.
I have a rabbi, reformed rabbi. He's a very reformed.
No, I was reformed. I was married by a reformed rabbi. A very reformed rabbi. A Nazi. He goes, I have to see what time it is. I don't know if you can see this watch, but it's an Italian, beautiful Italian watch. It has gold and marble inlay. My grandfather sold me this watch on his deathbed. But I haven't listened to that album since I'm like 18, you know.
I know.
But all of a sudden it comes, I listen to it so much.
Right.
You know, I remember.
It's like a song or something, like an old song.
And then I got to work with him in a movie.
What was the movie you did?
Small Time Crooks.
That's right, yeah.
Which is weird because when you do the movie with him, there's no title. It just says Woody Allen, you know, Fall Project or Summer Project.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so after you're done making it, like a year and a half later, you go, oh, the movie's coming out. You go, what's it called?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And they go, they're calling it Small Time Crooks. And you have absolutely zero connection to that title.
Because you don't even
know. No feeling for it. You go, oh, that's what they're calling it. But then after a while, you go, like, I'm in Small Time Crooks. But
did he let you read the script or did you just do your part?
No, he just hired me for a part. And then I was really worried that I would hear he would hire people and then they wouldn't work out and he'd fire them. So that was like my nightmare, like getting fired by the guy who was my, you know, idol, why I became a comedian.
Yeah.
Because when I was 15, I realized that I had no chance of becoming a black baseball player. And I went, God damn it. I didn't know. I was 7. I thought it was possible.
That's what you think when you're a kid. The biggest heartbreak.
I wanted to be Willie Mays. I go, I want to be a black baseball player.
I talk about it in my stand-up. I'm always like, I thought I was going to be a vanquisher of evil and a protector of the innocent. I thought I was going to be built differently. I thought, and the heartbreak as you grow older is you go, oh, I'm not going to look like the superheroes I read about. That's always really hard for boys, you know?
Maybe if you lifted, you're in good shape, but if you lifted weights, who knows?
No, I do lift weights. Nothing grows, dude.
But then you have to...
I'm built for humanity.
HGH or steroids, you know, and you would get that big.
But then I don't want to be that guy either. I don't want to be the guy that takes that stuff because then I'm too vain. So I'm caught...
Well, don't tell anybody. Just take it.
God, John. Whatever. Obviously,
any other problems you need solved?
Hello, Mr. Lovett. Who else were your heroes?
Well, Willie Mays and Woody Allen. When I grew up... I feel like I'm still growing up, but... in the 60s, baseball was the biggest sport. It was huge. Mm. It was as big as like the football or basketball is today. They were around, but they were much smaller.
Yeah, they were.
Much smaller.
Before
and
steroids.
Baseball was the whole country went, you know. It was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And
it really was.
So I really wanted to be a baseball player. Yeah, it was. And everybody was in Little League. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the Valley, you know, there were good guys, but the only guy I ever heard of in my age group that came out of the Valley that made it to the majors, and it was right out of high school, was Robin Yount, who's mm-hmm. now in the Hall of Fame. And then I never met him, but I think he was a year older than me. And then my father was a doctor in the Valley, and he goes, oh, this guy, Robin Yount's dating this girl in my office, one of my nurses.
Wow.
Who was a cute girl. But he was the only one I ever heard of. Since then, there's been other guys from the Valley. Is that me or you?
I think that's you. God, John. Who is it? Your agent? In the middle of this podcast, you know how important this podcast is?
Hello?
No, you have to answer it, John. You have to answer it. Let's see who it is. Hold.
Hello? What? No, Brian, I'm in the middle of your podcast. I cannot talk to you now. It's rude. Rude.
All right, sorry.
God, call me back after your podcast.
Sorry about that. I just like to mess around.
I'm sorry. It was you.
Yes, it was me.
I'm sorry.
You have famous friends. Well, because you're famous. Who do you have a famous friend that calls you that you still get a little starstruck about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm starstruck by all of them. I mean, I'm not going to kid you.
I'm the same way. I'm starstruck.
I can't help it. I just.
I know.
Lorraine Newman recommended me. She befriended me when I was in the Groundlings, and I did a play. I understudied a part, and Phil Hartman was the star of this show. It was like the summer of '84 when they had the Olympics, and they had the Olympics Arts Festival, and they picked 9 theaters to do shows. So they funded the Groundlings. And I was in their Sunday company, so I got to Phil recommended me to understudy a part. And I was like, Phil was a huge star there. I'm like, Phil Hartman knows who I am.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
Yeah, and so I did the show, and Lorraine Newman was doing the movie Perfect with John Travolta.
I remember it.
And she brought him to the show. Oh, so geez. Then they come backstage, and she says, how long have you been doing this? I go, this is my first night. She says, no, really. I go, no, I'm understudying. This is my first show. She goes, no, but really, how many shows have you done? I go, this is my first show. And she got mad. She goes, will you stop it? She goes, seriously, how many shows? I go, no, I'm serious. This is my first night. She goes, are you kidding? I'm like, no. And anyway, she befriended me. And
wow.
Anyway, I just spoke to her, or I actually emailed her.
What's
just ran into her recently,
right now?
And it's Lorraine, and she's great and she's sweet. But at the same, and I've known her, for, you know.
Yeah.
She recommended me to Lauren, but even then, I still like. Oh, it's Lorraine. I'm not going to lie.
Well, my friend, you know, you were when I think of SNL. I you know, Kevin Nealon's a good buddy of mine as well. You are very much in the Hall of Fame. As far as Saturday Night Live is concerned, I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Oh, thank you.
But it's true. And in 38 years, when I think of Saturday Night Live, you're definitely one of the names. And I think all of us agree that, you know, and Kevin's the same way. You know, and now it's funny because...
Kevin thinks I'm in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think he is in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he does. We'll check and we'll have him on this podcast. We'll have you both on the podcast. But, you know, my buddy now, Taron Killam, does SNL. And... You know, it's a different thing now with how saturated the market is. Like 4 million people probably watch SNL, whereas when you were doing it, 25 million people would watch
it. No, it wasn't. I remember I did the first show, and I thought the whole country's watching it.
Yeah.
And our ratings were maybe 5 million or sometimes 7 million.
Wait, no way. It had to have been
well,
more.
But that's the rating, you know, households. But then, you know, there's people in those households.
Right.
But when I did it, it was the... It had been on the air for 10 years, and it was Lorne Michaels was coming back. It was 1985, and it blows my mind because it's almost 30 years now ago. And now, and it's funny, I said to someone today, I said, you know, it was such a big deal. It was like when I was on the show,
huge.
Maybe there had been, you know, I was one of 30, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first year there was.
Yeah. Rare air.
And then the next 5 years, there was maybe another 10.
How long were you on the show for?
18, and then us, you know. So yeah.
That's true.
5 years. And now it's in its 39th year.
God.
And it's just bizarre.
It's really
bizarre. To me, I mean, I think it's great that it's still going. And you know, obviously, lots of great people came out of there after me and will continue to do so. And it's just what's amazing to me is you read, you go, here's who just got the show, and you read the names, you go, I don't know who they are.
I know.
And then in a few years, you're like, oh, my God, they're, like, still great. They're genius.
Yeah,
they're this.
Kristen Wiig is a good example of that. And you know.
They had a reunion show in Aspen 1 year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember. There was three rows of us people. And Martin Short and Steve Martin are there, and Chevy Chase and Lorne and Al Franken and Jim Downey, the head writer. And then in the second row, you had like, there was Mike Myers and me and Dana Carvey and Chris Farley and Spade, who weren't as known as us at the time. And they were on the show. Well, they were pretty well known. And then the back row, there's all these guys, and except for Norm MacDonald. And Mark McKinney was in there because he'd been a writer on the show my first year. But there's all these guys. I didn't know who they were.
Right.
And I'm like, and they didn't say anything, those guys. They didn't say one word. It was with Steve Croft from 60 Minutes because they just got in the show that year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who are these guys? Right?
Well, that's what's...
And now you look at it and you go, oh, there's Chris Kattan. Yeah. There's Will Ferrell. There's Daryl Hammond. But I didn't, you know, they were completely unknown. It's bizarre. As the time went on, I'd look at the photo. I go, "Oh, that's so and so. That's so." You know, I
always tell actors.
They
I always say actors. I, you know, friends. Well, I'm working. I'm like, look, dude. If you do your job, your life can change in one audition. I mean, now SNL is a nightmare audition process. I know about it.
I did it though, I think it was the worst because it was in all the newspapers. It was a huge story that Lorne was coming back after being gone from the show for 5 years. It was like the Miss America pageant. They go, and they're looking at people in Canada. They're looking at this. At whatever city he was in, there would be a huge article. He's mm-hmm. coming to Los Angeles.
Wow.
You know, and it was like they looked at everybody, and then it came down to 10 men and 10 women, and I'm on a plane, and I'm sitting next to some guy. I don't know who it is. And he goes, what do you do? You know, it's Dennis Miller. I don't know. Like, oh, I do this thing. There's another guy. I didn't know who he was. It was Damon Wayans. We all ended up getting the show, but we went there, and then they had this audition in this rehearsal hall called Minskoff Studios. It's a giant rehearsal hall, and they said, "Well, there's five spots. There's 10 of you for the men and 10 women. And there's five spots for each." Then slowly you find out they've already hired Randy Quaid. They've hired Robert Downey Jr., who I remember hearing of in a movie. Anthony Michael Hall was a huge star.
Huge star.
This guy Terry Sweeney. It was very funny. So now you go, oh, there's one guy didn't show up. There's nine guys. There's only one slot.
Wow.
And there's this comedian, a great stand-up, Pam Madison, and she was there auditioning. And they had Julie Brown and Jennifer Tilly. Mm-hmm. And those were the people from Los Angeles, and myself, Dennis, and Damon. So, you know, I don't think it's a secret that I'm Jewish.
Pausing, holding, so, anyway. Total silence. And continue.
And so Pam Madison says, you know, Rockefeller Center is right behind, it's on Avenue of the Americas and right behind, and 52nd, and then right behind it, like 2 blocks, is St. Patrick's Cathedral on 5th. So Pam Madison, said, who I knew from Los Angeles, says, John, I'm going to go light a candle at St. Patrick's Cathedral to pray that I get the show. You want to come with me and light a candle? And I said, hell yes. So, and I went in there and I thought, yes. I go, absolutely. Because I thought, I was so dead. I go, I have to get this. You know, and I. And
so you went and prayed to the radical rabbi.
I lit a candle and said, Jesus, I know I'm Jewish, but if you get me this show, I'll believe in you.
He was a Jew.
And I got it. Yeah, and he was a Jew, so I believe he existed and then he was Jewish. And I did. I really did. It's pretty funny though when you think about it. You're like,
well, it's also
how bad you want it. I go, anything to give me an edge. I'll light a candle to Jesus.
People don't realize how big that is. When I got Mad TV, what I realized was I was like, well, you know, at least I can say, I broke the professional ranks. If nothing else happens, at least I got paid to be an actor and I'm on TV. And if nothing else happens after this,
no, I mean, you know, it's so. Competitive and so tough.
Yeah.
And then six people got the show. Yeah. And like, you know,
and it never ends.
10,000 didn't.
It never ends, right? I mean, don't you feel that way? Like, you're always
trying
to prove
yourself.
Yeah,
keep it going. Yeah, which I just kind of find annoying after a certain point.
I had to
read for this part in a sitcom, and I'm looking at the people. It's not a good attitude to have, but I can't help it. I'm like, and I'm looking at the girl. I go, well, I've been doing this way longer than you. And I look at the guy. I go, you're very good, but I'm way funnier than you. And I go, this part's like nothing. I go, you're making me read.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not arrogance.
No, it's like they know what you can do.
They know me by now. I go, if you don't know what I do by now.
It's unbelievable.
It's kind of like
in the world
making...
of comedy, if it was a drama, you know, and they go, well, all right, but you got to read. I go, all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get it. But a comedy?
Guess what?
Can you be a funny actor? Yeah. I go,
Do you have timing?
No, I've only been doing it, you know.
I've only
been trying to be funny since I'm five, and then I've been on Saturday Night Live and 40 movies and series, but no.
It's better to take them. Take them to your mansion.
No, this is the part I can't do.
Take them to your mansion. Take them in your Porsche.
Well, I mean, if the thing is, when you have heat on you, they go, of course you don't have to read. You want it? You know, right. They offer you the part.
Right.
I'm doing a sitcom now, and Byron Allen is producing it as a syndication. But, you know, he goes, here, you want it? You want to be on the show?
Is that with
Mr.
Bill?
Box Office.
Oh, it's with Mr. Bell. It's Bill Bellamy.
Yeah, Bill Bellamy.
I love Bill. Bill's
Vivica Fox.
I got to get Bill on here. I love Bill.
Alex Thomas. Great stand-up. Tony Roberts. Essence Atkins.
Yeah, I know.
Tim Meadows.
Yeah, Tim's great.
Everybody's
guy.
Black but me.
Funny people.
It's true.
Yeah, but now
so
you
in
can,
some sense.
No,
so
but then you go, and then after, it's weird when you're. It's true though, and then you go, "Oh, we're all just comics and actors, and it doesn't mean anything," you know.
I know. Well, I just
and that's why they don't understand comedians that make fun of ethnic types. They go, "You don't get it. You're teasing the person, and it's funny. It's not. You're not serious."
I just did a movie called Ride Along with Kevin Hart and Lawrence Fishburne and Ice Cube and John Leguizamo. I was the only white guy for miles. Even the people working on the movie were black. It was pretty wild. It was in Atlanta. It was an interesting experience. I liked it. It was a very interesting thing to be.
Well, yeah, and then what you realize is the only one thinking about that is you.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you realize the whole thing about the tragedy of racism in America is that, and I said to, I don't know who I said it to, a friend of mine who happens to be black. I said, this is my feeling about it. And they go, what? I go, I think that most black people are just looking at white people going, when are you all just going to stop this nonsense?
Yeah, I know. I feel that way.
They have no idea, and you realize that it's true. They're like, you know, people don't care, and I don't care.
The other day, I was saying,
a fun job. It's well written. I'm grateful that Byron gave me a job. You know, they're all really funny, and we have a really good time. And Bill, I love all of them. And Bill's just a great guy.
He's a great guy. We did a movie together. I got to get that guy on my podcast.
What movie?
It's not a movie that'll see the light of day, I'm afraid, probably. I've done a number of movies, John. As long as they pay me, I'll do them because I'm a whore.
You're very good at accents, aren't you?
Thank you very much. Yes, I am.
What was the one you said, the Lebanese guy at the wedding? Was
for,
it the Hangover?
The Hangover, yes. I played like this. No, Yanni, I can... Because
no, I remember I met you years ago, and then I didn't see you for years, and I saw you on the screen. I go, hey, that's Brian. That's Joe Rogan's friend. That's how
Joe Rogan says hi to you. I just talked to him.
Oh, says, thanks.
Yes. He likes you a lot.
Tell him
when
I
you took
hello.
Over. You worked with Joe because you took over for the late Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
I remember that so well when my friend told me he was killed, and then I called Joe right away. That was such a fucking
horrible
tragedy.
Yeah, it's the worst thing that ever happened in my life. And
you guys were close, huh?
Oh yeah, like it was like my big brother. Yeah, we're like brothers, you know.
And I
idolized him, and he was the king of the groundlings, and everyone wanted to be like him. But you can ask Joe. He was like, at that point, Phil was like, he was only in his 40s, but he was enough significantly older than everyone else in the cast that he was kind of like the dad on the show.
Right.
And they all loved him. And
I was actually with Phil when Chris Farley died, and we were shooting the show at the time. And
News Radio?
Yeah, and he was close to Chris. And I remember he was just kind of sitting there, and I think he was smoking a cigarette, and I was like, are you doing all right? He goes, yeah, I'm doing all right. It was just a sad ending, you know. It was an interesting... it was interesting to kind of be with him when somebody like...
No, Chris was just... I was friends with him, too, and it was just...
I think that in some ways...
It was very tragic and unnecessary, but I don't know. He had problems. You know, he had
drug problems. Clearly,
yeah.
But I feel like it's so competitive in today's world that there isn't the kind of drugging, like rock and rollers and people don't do the kind of drugging and boozing that they used to. It's almost like
because people don't put up with it, and then... You know, you die.
Too much money involved, and you die.
And you just go, how many people have to
Well, comedian who said, didn't you guys watch, you have a meth problem now, didn't you watch Behind the Music? Don't you get how this turns out?
Yeah.
It never works out at the end. It's too competitive. You know, if you're a problem on a set and there's too much money, they go, oh, really? Next. We'll just go over that guy over there.
Well, I think, though, that people that are addicted, they'll say you just don't understand when you're addicted to something.
I have sympathy for it.
It's all you can think about. And then they go, and then after a while, you're not even taking the stuff
to get high.
You're taking it so that you don't get sick.
Yeah.
And then I don't have that, so I think it's awful. And then, you know, and then the other thing I learned about it, unfortunately, because I've dealt with people in it, is that there's nothing you can say. There's nothing you can say. They have to want to stop, because when you say, like, they're an alcoholic, you're like, don't drink, you know, what you're saying to them is like, give me the thing that's taking away your pain.
Right.
And they're looking at you like, no.
Yeah.
I don't know, if your like leg was cut off and someone goes, you want some Novocaine? You're like, yeah. You know, don't take it. You're like, what are you, insane?
Listen, the first thing that they make you admit in AA is that you are powerless over your addiction. And if you don't admit that, then you're not ready to get help. Because the fact of the matter is, there are addictions that render you powerless and you can't do it alone. You need help. That's why I have a lot of sympathy for anybody who has an addiction. I think all of us have addictions to some extent or another anyway. But some of us have addictions that are not as destructive or might even be beneficial, at least economically. But, you know, until you've been, and I've never had to wrestle with addiction, thank God, but until you've been somebody who can't stop drinking, and I know people like that, or can't stop drugging, you got to be careful with being too judgmental, you know? I mean, it's kind of one of those things, man.
On the other hand, when these people are in your life and
they can't put up with it,
and they destroy your life and they don't care about you, yeah, and they'll do it, you know, then you're like,
got to cut them out. That's what they say in Al-Anon, because I dated a girl who was a drug addict, and he goes, look, man, this is not about, I'm not teaching you how to be better company for an asshole. You know, it's time to cut this person out of your life, because they can't, obviously, you know, they're tearing you down. So, and I didn't.
And
I used to always date the
crazies.
And
you were dating Amy Winehouse?
Yes, I was. I used to always date, because in L.A., I used to always like the crazy projects with, like, tattoos and just, you know, who really issues. Knew their way around the pole. Like, that was a thing for me.
Well, that's the thing. Everyone knows the crazy girls are great in bed.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Because why are you with her? What do you think?
Yeah, yeah, for the stimulating conversation and the money she saves me. No. Exactly.
But you think you can help them and you can't. And I've done that, and it's just...
Oh, of course. I'd move them into my house. I'd be like, oh, you come from a good family? Cape Cod? Nah, it's boring. I'll take the chick over there with the bat tattooed to her face and the track marks. That looks like a great project.
Well, that I never had...
I liked it if they smelled like cigarettes and disappointment. Eyeliner. Yeah. I liked it. Oh, I liked it. A little dirty.
Is that from your act?
No.
That line?
No. I don't do any of my act lines. I hate
cigarettes
that.
Cigarettes and disappointment?
I hate people who do stuff like from their act, you know? No.
Recycle.
You should put that line in your act. That's great. Like, girls smell like cigarettes and disappointment. What are you, a poet all of a sudden?
Yeah. It just rolls out.
Brian Kerouac.
Are you doing a lot of stand-up?
Yeah.
Okay. Why'd you look at me like, it's not like, you know.
Remember I said I was going to.
Yeah,
the
I know. I'm just saying, do you do a lot of it? I mean, are you on the road a lot? Because I am, and I love it. I like it more than anything else.
Well, I was, but I get just too tired.
Yeah, it is a little exhausting.
No, I don't mind like twice a month. But if it was every weekend,
it's too much.
For me, it's too much.
I do twice a month because I got kids and I miss them.
You have kids?
Yeah.
Where?
I keep them.
They're in the whisper room.
I keep them in the whisper room.
How old are your kids?
2 and 5. Siamese twins. No. Oh, it all makes sense now.
Siamese twins. So you mean the 5-year-old was born and then just stuck for 3 years?
Yeah.
And then the other one came out?
It grew out of, yes. My wife walked around with it, sort of hanging.
You married now?
Yeah. I know.
Nice wedding ring.
I know. I never wear one. Because it gets in the way of all my cheating. Anyway, because I have to explain it to all those sluts.
Who smell like cigarettes.
I can't wear any jewelry. I can't wear. You have a nice watch on, by the way. But it's because you have. How much money do you have in the bank? I mean,
what time is it?
You mean it keeps growing?
Well, yeah, it earns interest.
That's like what kind of money do you make on interest? I mean, let's just start there. A day.
Well, it doesn't. It's like, you know, what does it pay? Not a day. It's like it's compounded. But what does it pay a year? I don't know. What is it? 1.5-2%. It's nothing. You know, on a CD.
Yeah, but what does that come to?
1.5-2% on what?
Seems like you're doing.
It's
a lot of
math. Close to 300 to 400. No, not that. No, not. I was going to say 400 million.
Okay, that's a lot of money, John.
It's close to a billion a month.
A billion a month, John? Yeah. That just seems like so much.
Yes, I'm not. It seems like a lot of money.
I mean, it's a lot.
But then there's taxes.
Why don't you open orphanages?
Taxes.
with all that money? I mean, what do you spend it on? You have. Do you have?
Syrup? I help. Philanthropy. I help organizations all over the world.
Is okay. your name Bill Gates by any chance?
No, but what happens is you start making money, and then you invest it, and then grows, and then you invest that, and it grows, and then you just
you're a genius.
Oil.
Oil. Hey, are you an oil baron? You're so modest. I can barely get it out of you. You're so modest.
Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, you came here alone. You came here with a dog, not even a servant or anything.
Well, the dog is a... I'm glad you think it's a real dog, but it isn't.
It's probably a Japanese robot you had made in Japan.
By your company.
Yes.
By his company, Stark Industries.
Well, it's funny you mention that because that whole Iron Man thing and the Stark Industries and everything... They think it's based on the guy that created the Tesla, but no.
John, are you saying it's based on you?
Yeah.
John, you're so
well,
modest.
I'm not saying it, but it's,
I guess we can imply that you're the real Tony Stark. I think that's his name.
I remember I went to Boston. It's so funny, for a summer. And I used to get beat up, so I went to this karate school, and I got really good at it. And then I ended up teaching Joe Rogan karate.
Okay, I don't remember him saying that. So were you wearing a mask or a ninja mask? Or...
Yes.
Where are you looking? You're just staring off into the distance right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what? Part of his karate training.
Your eyes
training.
Totally glassed over. Oh my God! You're
what you're talking about?
You're having heavy memories, dude. What do you want to do?
You
with
ask
the rest
Joe.
Of your life?
Joe, Joe is a great guy, and as you know, he used to compete.
Yes.
In the karate schools, I'm sure he told
so
you.
So did I, by the way.
And
sorry.
Ask Joe about about this move?
No, you're pinching your fingers together.
Yeah, it's called the Fast Freak Fiber Twitch Jugular Pinch. Ask Joe about that.
I guess I will.
And he's the only person I've ever met that figured out the antidote to that deathly move.
So you grab someone's throat.
No, they're jugular. And you
just their
you
jugular.
Pinch it and you cut off the blood flow.
And they pass out.
Well, yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense. You said, well, so you're really good with your hands.
Just that move. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Except for Joe. Joe figured out. The antidote.
How many cars do you own?
Here, I'll show you the antidote. Go like this. Joe, he came to his head. He goes, John, I figured out the move for that.
Yeah?
I go, what? He goes.
He just slaps your hand. Joe loves to fight. Joe's a rough one. I'm going to Toronto with him this weekend.
Is he competing?
No. He's too old right now. He's not. He's like my age.
But he doesn't think he's too old.
Well, he's got his black belt in jiu-jitsu. And he works out, he's so thick and strong. And I was just at his house, and I was like, Joe, what's going on with your shoulders? He goes, dude, the difference in you and me is this. You work out. I push myself to the point where my body thinks it's going to die. And I was like, well, that's Joe. Joe's the most extreme human being.
But he's always worked out like that.
Yeah, always, always. I said to him, I go, I was with Nick Apollo, and I go, hey, when you don't work out, and he goes, before I could even get that sentence out, he goes, I don't, I've never not worked out, so I don't know how to answer your question. I was like, oh. All right.
It's good. It's good. Everyone should be, work out like that. It's good exercise, and it
what
keeps
do you do
you
for? What do you do to keep yourself so lithe?
Well, I've gained a lot of weight, clearly, but I if you knew me,
you actually look like you lost.
I play. I'm trying to lose now. I play tennis and
I like tennis.
Weights and the different stuff.
Do you have a
but
tennis
you
court?
Got to do it consistently.
Do you have a tennis court at your house? Sorry, you probably have a lot of tennis courts at your house.
Well, first of all, which house?
Oh. I'm sorry.
Second of all, I bought some land in Queens, and I built in New York, and I built a house, and then I have a lot of tennis courts.
Are you saying that you own the area that they hold the U.S. Open in?
Yes.
John, it's crazy. How well you've done financially. I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
It's kind of inspiring. And you haven't changed.
You know what I realize, though, is I tell people this, and they go, oh, he's joking, he's lying, he's funny, yeah. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And then I thought, because I don't want people to know, and I thought, that's what they'll think. I can tell anybody. Nobody will probably believe it, but yeah. Yeah. And it's and then I lease it back to the city, and then it's fun. It's, you know.
No, I mean, it's fun. Well, when you're an actor, people think you're way wealthier than you are, right?
Well, you make money as an actor, but, you know, you've got to – I mean, if you're going to, you know, buy into oil wells, you're going to make a lot more.
Well, you had the foresight, and I didn't, so I just feel like...
Well, you can do it now. You just buy the stock.
Well, okay.
It's not I'm buying an oil stock, and then you flip it over.
Yeah.
Oil, you know, it makes money, and then you just keep doing it.
All right. Well,
and then at a certain
point...
You're
making it sound really easy.
It
is.
You get a call
more...
from your accountant, and he goes, you're, you know, billionaire, and then I go, how much now? And he goes, I don't know. It's so much, and then it's just like I go, well, is it more than so and so? Is it more than this? Yes. Is it more than so and so? No. Then you get a call. Remember, you asked me, is it more than so and so? And I said no. He goes, yeah. He goes, well, it is now.
Well, obviously you're on your way to being the richest man in the world. It sounds like. Oh, my God, you are the richest man in the world. I'm so embarrassed right now.
It's all right.
John, you're literally playing with your fingers like you're playing with that bottle cap because you're so modest that you...
Well, that and it itches. Oh, and it itches. Here's the thing about money, Brian. It doesn't make your personal problems go away.
It doesn't make your
personal
problems...
You're still going to itch.
It's so true. I was with Kevin James, and I was shooting... what's the show he used to do? King of Queens. He was on the phone. He was talking to his vet, and then his wife, and then his agent. And he was just like, he was back and forth, and he was wiping his face because we were getting bit by bugs. And he was spraying himself, and he looked down on himself, and he goes, God, I gotta lose weight. And I looked at him, and I go, money. And he just got into syndication. He had $50 million. And I go, money buys you happiness.
Huh? Did he just buy a giant house in
Florida?
Florida?
Yeah.
Did he move out of California? Is that because of the taxes?
I think so. I think he just moved out of California because he didn't want to. I think he has a kid now. I think a lot of people, I think about that, moving out of California because I don't want them growing up here. But then they might turn into John Lovitz, and then they'd be the richest man in the world and a comic legend. So that wouldn't be so bad.
Well, that's the thing. You know, money, it doesn't solve your personal problems. It solves your financial problems.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I mean, you still have to do something with your time.
So true. It's so true, man.
You went to Harvard University, right?
Yeah.
And every year they go, can you help us, you know, add another, you know, couple of billion, you know, right. Endowment. Yeah. And I'm like, you know. And then at some point I go, like, Jesus, you know, I don't mind helping, but now, like, I am the endowment. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, that's...
I go, I think I've given you enough. You know, there's other schools.
With great power comes great responsibility. If you could be a superhero, who would it be?
Or are you a superhero?
Oh, well, I think, you know...
Your favorite
superhero. Either Superman or the Invisible Man.
The Invisible Man would be good. What would you do if you were invisible besides crouch and masturbate in other
situations? Although I think Superman, because Superman can make himself invisible, can't he?
I don't think so.
No.
He's so fast that he probably could. But
well, I would do what any man would do, which would be, you know, see a hot girl and follow her in her place. And
yeah, you'd be a voyeur. I said, besides be a crouching masturbator, what else would you do?
I didn't say I would do that.
You wouldn't crouch and masturbate.
Well, no, because they go, hey, where'd that come from?
Once you come, you give away
your hiding place.
They're like, what's going on over there?
Even if you're behind a curtain, you're like, you know, and then there's a little dog going,
and the dog
hey, Fluffy, what are you looking up? You. Oh, you behind the curtain.
Ah, oh, that damn invisible crouching masturbator again. Ah!
No, it would be cool because, you know, you'd go, women, they don't see anything, and you go like, hello? And they're like, what was that? This is your imagination.
This is your ghost.
This is a ghost. Oh, do you ever made love to a ghost?
Touch this.
I can't see you.
You're probably packing. You're packing some heat.
But it feels real. Am I dreaming? Yeah, that's it. You're dreaming. That's the ticket.
Yeah, that's dreaming. That's it. You're dreaming. Yeah. I pitched it.
It'd be great, you know. And then, like, people that bother you, just go up and slug them.
I know.
Right? Wouldn't you?
There are a lot of people that could use a fucking punch in the face. Mm. Sometimes I wish I could just. My superpower would be I just want, like, to be able to see the sociopaths in the world and then just off them.
Wouldn't that make
you a sociopath?
Well,
I don't.
Oh, shit. I guess it would be. Ah, full circle.
No, I think...
Danny, you and your Harvard education.
I think you just made that up.
No, I didn't, John.
Oh, my superpower would be...
I don't talk that way, dude.
To feed the homeless.
That's not... That's a bad impression of Brian Callen. I have a deep, resonant voice. Do me again.
A deep, resonant voice. My superpower.
My superpower.
You just made that up.
It sounds vaguely like Christopher Walken.
My superpower. At the end of the day, I'd get a...
I worked with him in the movie The Stepford Wives. And
that's right.
And
Stepford.
He's so funny. And then I said to him once, I go, do you talk like that on purpose? He goes, yes. I go, are you aware that you talk like that? He goes, yes. I go, so you're doing it on purpose? He goes, yes. And then we were on the set, and he just started making up these lines at the end. He had a little scene, and he's talking, and then he would say something ridiculous at the end. And then he'd look at me, and I'm off to the side. So I'm, like, crying, laughing. And then he kept doing it. And then one time I go, are you trying to make me laugh? He goes, yes. I go, you're killing me. And he would say the most ridiculous things. And no one said, no one said, hey, what are you doing? Don't say that. No one would tell him not to do it. And it got more and more like outrageous, the stuff he was saying that made no sense.
Randy Perlman.
And I was just, and he was doing it on purpose. Yeah. And I was like dying laughing.
He's supposed to be hilarious. Randy Perlman, I think that's the last name. It was a comic. Told a story on stage one time. He said that he had done this movie called Search and Destroy, and Chris Walken walked up to him and a bunch of other guys, and he goes, you guys, you know, it was at the rap party, he goes, you know what fame is? Fame is knowing you could walk into a room, fuck anyone in the ass. That's fame. And he walked away. And they were like, what in the world? I mean, isn't that the greatest? And that is what fame is.
But that's his humor.
Oh, he's hilarious.
You know, I got to know him, became friends with him in New York, and he. I was in Los Angeles at this restaurant, and I was sitting next to him, and he just starts telling me this idea he has, and he ended up doing it. But he's telling me, and I'm just like crying, laughing.
What was the idea?
He goes, you know, John. So and he's talking like this. So I had this idea. I don't know how good my impression is, where He goes, you know, I like to cook, so I was thinking of doing like a cooking show. And he goes, anyway, guess who I pitched it to? You're not going to believe who I met. I go, who? He goes, the president of the Food Network. The president. And I'm like, well, all right. No, but you don't understand.
It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, you don't understand. He goes, and, you know, I'd have celebrities on, you know, and we would talk about the careers, and then they, make some food, you know, because, you know, I mean, everybody cooks something. And then, but the way he did it, I'm just like dying laughing. Like, you wouldn't think, he's hilarious.
He's hilarious. That's right. I've heard that he's hilarious.
And a very nice guy. And a great actor. I did a play reading, a script reading with him once. And I called him, I said, hey, Chris, I'll see you at the script reading at 3. He goes, what script reading? I go, it's at 3. He goes, I don't know anything about it. I go, oh, your name's on. He goes, oh, your kid. He didn't know. He goes, God damn. He's like mad. I go, yeah, it's at 2. And he goes, oh, he didn't know. So anyway, he goes there. And, of course, he's the most entertaining one there.
Yeah, of course.
And I said, and he would, you know, he says lines that you'd think, how do you say them? And then he says it.
I know.
In a way that you would never imagine, you would never come up with that way of saying the line, like, ever.
I know.
Nobody would. And yet, it's so different, unique, and yet it makes sense.
I know.
Like, more sense than, even though it's so odd, it just makes more sense.
That's why they're movie stars. That's why they're so good.
Yeah, and then I said, how do you do that? I go, how do you, like, think? He goes, I just try to surprise myself.
God, that's like Nick Nolte. I did a reading with him. It was the same thing. I was like, you're doing this. Like, I don't know that I would change anything. And then I see the movie. You know, he's on another level, man. The guys like that.
Oh, yeah, some of those guys. Yeah,
it's, you know, that's what they do. And, you know, like, I did a movie with Al Pacino's girlfriend, and I was obsessed with asking her 1,000 questions about Al Pacino. And she said, he's just acting as his life. The dude will take the lines and just go over and over with it. He's walking around. He's talking, doing them, waking up in the middle of the night and, you know, watching TV, but doing them. And that's what he does, you know? He's just always kind of...
Well, it's a lot of work. That's the thing, is it?
You got to love it. I don't like it that much.
You don't?
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, if you put... the thing about acting is you could make anything out of the part, but you have to like put a lot of, into it. And if you do the work, it's interesting. If you just walk through the part, then and just kind of say, oh, I'll just say, hi, how are you? Good to see you.
No,
okay,
of course,
bye.
Of course.
It's just then it's you're not going to be very good and it's not interesting. But there's if you go look at this is what's really going on. There's all these different things going on in this person's life from where they are physically, the way they walk, the way they talk, what they're thinking, which is huge in film. What are you thinking? How do you get from thought A to thought B? What's their relationship with the other person? Where did they just come from? All this. All these things will add to your character, all these little subtle things. And if you do it, you know, you'll have a great performance. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh. And then it becomes interesting. And I go, why? Why are you doing this? But why? You know, what's you know your motivation? Why? And I read a thing. Montgomery Clift said, he goes, film acting, it's like you do all these like five or six simple little things, but they all add up.
Right.
And he said, like, he goes, like, say you're talking to somebody and the conversation is just, oh, how have you been? What's new? Nothing, da-da-da, right? He goes, but, and you're smoking a cigarette. He goes, and then the ash, you forget to flick it, and then it gets really, really long, and then all of a sudden you flick it. That tells the audience that you were so engrossed in what you were talking about or something that you didn't even think to flick it.
Yep.
And they go, oh, and that's a piece of information. And movie acting is really hard because everything you do, the audience is reading into it. Everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris Walken, my friend told me that he did Richard III, and she's railing in the scene. She's railing. He's killed her husband, and he's going to, of course,
Queen
seduce her.
Queen Anne.
Yes, and he's killed her husband.
The famous Queen Anne speech in Richard III.
The famous Queen Anne speech.
Are you shocked that I knew it?
Yes. Thank you, John Lovitz. Who also knows Shakespeare, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, I do.
This is what he brings. This is what he saves and then brings to the Brian Callen.
I studied straight just acting for 10 years,
Brian. As well as a lot of great investment tips.
But you're a good actor, and that doesn't surprise me. I mean, a great actor, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to that laugh. It's so evil. But he was doing Richard III, and Queen Anne was railing, and I think it might have been Meryl Streep or something. She's going off on her thing, and he to show her. To show the audience that he had so little respect for what she was saying, in the middle of her railing speech, this is Shakespeare in Park, he looks down at his shirt and finds a loose sort of thread, a crumb, and he kind of reaches for it and shakes it, kind of brushes it off his shoulder, and then goes back to her. And even though she's going through this huge speech, the whole place goes crazy. Chris Walken can do one thing.
But started laughing.
And yeah, because it was amazing. You know, he was showing. He was essentially saying, "When you're done, I'm going to fuck you. So I'll let you rail, young lady." Yeah. As I, you know, that's what makes him.
But
so
that's that. Yeah, brilliant. That all the great. That's like a simple thing, but it says a lot.
Yeah, behavior.
And then to think of it, and basically though, what you do, what I learned, film acting basically is. Is that you don't do, which I think he was doing, was you don't do anything. You're just still. And then you do that one little thing, it sticks, it means something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you're constantly doing stuff and it's like messy
well,
and muddy.
Well, every behavior is informed, right? It's like psychology into behavior. The notion that, you know, you're not doing things, everything you do is specific. It's not general movement, you know?
But I wonder if he planned it or if he just did it on the spot. Or it's possible to go, why did you do that? He goes, you know, he might have said, did you play? He's no, just, you know, it was just, you know, I got bored. And I said, oh.
Right. Well, Daniel,
which fits the thing, you know, but Daniel, I don't know. I'd be interested to ask him. Like, he did this movie, Biloxi Blues. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So I saw the movie. He was great in it.
Great
so
play.
After, and he plays a drill sergeant. So I saw him at this restaurant where we used to hang out in New York. And I said, hey, Chris. So I saw that Biloxi Blues. And I said, can I ask you a question? And he said, yeah. He goes, I said, well, that's the only time I ever saw an actor play a drill sergeant and that didn't, like, scream and yell. He never screamed or yelled the whole thing. It was just very quiet. And he has a scene where he's really drunk and he's not yelling. He just never yelled. Every movie you see a drill sergeant, they're mm-hmm. always going, you know, you eyeball me, boy. And, you know, they're all, mm-hmm. you know. And he didn't do any of that. He didn't. And he goes, oh, it's funny you should mention that. I said, why? He goes, well, actually, that was my only thought about the part. I said, what? He goes, not to yell.
God.
And I said, why? He goes, well, you know, it's... I go, well, why'd you decide to do that? He goes, well, you know, it's... You know, do the opposite.
Yeah.
It's more interesting.
Do the opposite.
Are you writing this down?
it's being burned in my head, and I'm recording it, believe it or not. I'm recording it, and I'm going to blast it out to the world. I wonder how many hits we're going to get from John Lovitz. Probably like a million.
I don't want to brag, but watch me. That's so So bragging.
It's awesome.
I don't want to brag. I need you to watch me in a movie, Brian, called Casino Jack.
Watch you? I lived it.
And you'll see what acting is. I need you to watch me.
Casino Jack.
Brian, I'm not trying to brag, but if you really want to know about acting, I need you to watch me.
If you want to change your artistic outlook, you need to study me. You should have said study me.
Is there like a fan or air?
Nope. We like to keep it very hot in here. It's like one of Dante's rings.
Can we like get some air?
Dante's rings. It sounds like a very unfortunate sex toy.
Before he dies.
What?
You can talk.
Dead.
Oh, it's probably
The air conditioner is broken. Can you open the window and get some?
Let's get some. Oh, look.
It's getting so warm.
Rena's gonna help us. You generate a lot of heat. You have a lot of heat on you because you're a star.
Brian.
Yes?
I don't want to brag. But if you'd like to become a better stand-up.
Yes.
I'm going to need you to watch my
performance in Casino Jack.
I'm going to need you to study my performance.
Frame by frame.
I'm going to need you to...
And you're going to say, well, I didn't learn anything. And I go, well, what did you see? You were just up there. I mean, you're funny, you know, but I wasn't like, you weren't doing anything. And I would say, ah. That's my acting teacher said in film acting. I go, I did some scene. I was like really pushing. He goes, do it again. He goes, tell me what you didn't. Sorry.
He has gas. Sorry, he has gas.
My lip has gas. He goes, tell me what you did today. So I said, well, I don't know. I got up and I showered and got some eat and went to work for 8 hours. And then I came home and showered and I came here. That's it. He goes, okay, now do the scene and just say the lines. It's like you talk to the girl the way you just talked to me. So I did it. And I thought I was awful. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, I go, well, I thought it was the most boring thing ever. I go, well, I wasn't doing anything. And he said, aha. And I went, huh? And there was, oh. And I didn't realize right then, but I thought that's what film acting, Tony Barr is a great teacher. He wrote a book, Acting for the Camera.
Yeah.
But he goes, it's like if you think of the camera is the person's eye, and a person, and the microphone is their ear. And then it's right there. You go there. The head's right there.
So when you shout.
Well, if you think about that, you can just, you know.
Do whatever.
You can be very, real. But you're going to be real and boring. I mean, there's a lot to it. It's a very subtle art.
It's subtle art.
And it's really hard.
But it's also.
If you do
anything
fake, the camera picks it up. It picks up everything.
I went in. One time I did a scene in acting class when I was. And I had to play drunk. And I got ready to play drunk. And I walked in. I was like, I'm drunk. You guys don't like me. I don't know. I'm doing a drunk guy like this. And I kept falling down. And the teacher said, he goes, I have to stop you. And I was like, oh, okay. And he goes, it's odd. You're behaving in a very odd way. And I said, oh.
I know what he said. He goes, try to act like you're not drunk, right?
Yeah, he said, you're trying to fall down. Drunks try to stand up. They try to stay up. And I was like, oh, it's kind of like when you come in to die. And he's like, well.
But that's normal. That's what you think at first. Everyone does that. And you go like,
once they tell you that, you go, yeah, that's right. When I'm drunk, I'm trying to pretend I'm not drunk. I don't want people to know I'm drunk.
Yeah.
If you're sick. You know, if you're sick, you're not coming in like I'm dying. You're trying to
not throw
treat
up.
It like a and treat it like it's an inconvenience. You
Which
don't want to make people feel
no,
bad
but
about
if
it.
You're sick, you're trying to not throw up.
That's a very good sick right there. That's a really convincing sick.
Well, that's why I wanted some air. I was like going to barf.
Well, now we have some air. Is there a role in the history of showbiz that you'd like to have played? That inspired you?
Oh, yes. Yes, Brian.
Yes? Go on.
Oh, did you want to know the name of it?
Yes, of course I did. And then
I
like
the movie
it.
Marty by Patty Chayefsky.
That's
and
one of the great movies.
Rod Steiger won an Emmy and Ernest Borgnine won the Oscar.
Great movie. Don't worry about noise. It's okay. We had the windows open so you people have to deal. It's John Lovitz.
That was my train, by the way.
You have a train?
That was my private train.
That seems
here in Los Angeles know what is the subway system.
That seems very expensive, John.
I share it, Brian. I'm a very giving person.
He's a philanthropist.
Have you been to my baseball stadium? I let the Dodgers play there.
That's so impressive.
Didn't they buy it? No, I leased it to Magic Johnson.
A lot of people don't realize that John actually speaks this way. He's from England, by way of the valley.
I'm so tired of speaking in my character's voice, Brian. I hope you don't mind. But I speak as myself.
You sound exactly like Catherine Hepburn. Hepburn.
Father was from Texas and had lots of oil wells.
I took them over. Well, John, we usually keep this at 1 hour, and I don't want to keep you waiting. I see you glancing at your very expensive watch.
Well, I can talk more, but do you have any, like, cookies?
Let's get John some cookies, please. Homemade, everyone.
How long have you been doing a stand-up?
Well, you know, I started 20 years ago almost, and then, because I realized, I was like, oh, there's nothing about me. People aren't going to be like, let's get that medium white guy in our movie. He looks so unique, you know? And so I started doing stand-up right before, then I got Mad TV, and then I decided I didn't need to do stand-up anymore. I'd just become a famous actor.
Were you on Mad TV with Artie Lang?
I was in the original cast, thank you very much.
Oh, first I didn't 2 years. That.
Yeah.
I must have seen you and didn't realize it was you.
Then I got fired after 2 years, and then I went and did that
Why?
Show, Oz. I wasn't coming out with characters. I wasn't that good, let's be honest. And I knew I was going to get fired.
And then you play characters in movies.
Yeah, and then I played characters in movies. I've never been my career really, in a way, I look back on it, and I think if I had worked harder at acting, which I never did, I would have been further ahead. But I used to get nervous on auditions. I wasn't good at auditions. So the jobs I got and continue to get...
But you're still acting, aren't you?
Yeah. But I just feel like when I get a job...
perhaps I could help you.
I would appreciate that. I'm going to drop your name at every... Isn't it funny how when you're...
I do know acting. You know, it's not being modest. I really do, and I could actually help you.
I believe it. You're an excellent actor.
But it's all I studied for years.
But that's what I studied for years, too. It's not that I don't think I can know how to approach a role.
Although I'm not saying you're not good. I think you're very good. I saw you in The Hangover, right. And I thought you were really good.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I could teach you anything.
Well, I think
it's only because you just said I'm not very good. No. So if you said, what are you having trouble with? Why don't you tell me? We can educate people. What are you having trouble with in the part? What questions do you have?
My thing is more of an attitude about when I see material, sometimes it's not inspiring. So it's hard for me to work on, and I'd rather work on my stand-up or my script that I'm writing or whatever. That's kind of
what. But is it a job that you have?
Well, stand-up for me is something I really love, and I make enough money so I don't have to so much worry about, you know.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, I'm not making $40 billion a year or a month.
I'm not even making $40 billion a year. Way more than that.
John, I need to borrow some money. Are you an evil man? Would you buy this podcast and then just have it announce it as defunct?
No, I wouldn't buy the podcast, but I bought the street.
Are you going to start charging us rent?
I paid cash for it.
John,
what's the name of the street?
It's called Cashio.
Hello. Oh.
John, you renamed the street.
You know, this is kind of very sad, actually, but I went to a Harvard High School. High school. So all the wealthiest families went there. So there's a guy there in my class. He just died. Awful.
Wait, you went to Harvard Westlake?
Yeah, but it was just Harvard then. Grant Adamson was my class, and he just died in a ballooning accident in Switzerland.
Oh, no.
Horrible.
Really?
His family, they crashed into a power line, and then it just dropped 165 feet. And he was with his wife
God,
and his two
terrifying.
Daughters.
No. They were all killed?
No, just him.
Oh, that's so terrible.
And I'm in shock. And the nicest guy ever. And Grant, if you've ever been to Malibu, you ever see this as the Adamson house?
Yeah.
That's his family. They owned, if you go in there, his grandmother, right? They owned everything.
God.
Land from Topanga Canyon to Oxnard along
the
coast.
That's a large area.
My God. Yeah, it was like a land grant.
What a bummer, man. I'm sorry that he died.
Yeah, it's horrible. Nice guy.
Well, we're all going, man. You know, I don't want to die. I don't want to die by animal. I wouldn't mind dying.
By animal?
Yeah, like being eaten by a shark or something. That would suck. I want to die dramatically, though.
Well, if you keep picturing that, you will.
But I want to die like a hero. Like,
are you saying you believe in the secret?
Bring it. What do you want to say right before you die?
I have to shit.
That doesn't seem very dramatic. John.
Can I pick something else?
Well, think
about
it.
Pick something else.
That was without thinking.
Okay.
Oh.
Is that the noise you want to make?
Yeah, it sounds like this is what I want to say.
It sounds like you just climaxed.
Oh, God.
Dude.
Your pussy's so tight.
No. John.
Oh, baby, thank you.
John, this is a family show.
Oh, you know what?
But now I have
you
a
butter. Asked now. Me what I wanted to say, and that's what I would like to say.
Hunter's head just hit the table like he's laughing so hard.
No, well, how else do you want to die?
Well, no, you're right. I want to die like this. If I do have an orgasm, I want to go, this is for you. And then I want the dog, I want the little dog to come in and go.
I'm going to cut you out of the wheel.
Cut you out of the wheel. And then you die. And then the dog laughs
like,
and then she saves the dog's poo because some of
you
are
like, I'm going to come. Oh, I fucked your sister.
and then
you're just out.
John, that seems
you
so cool.
So you come and then you wreak havoc.
You destroy everybody.
And then you create
so cool. You're with a woman, she's sexy, but she's just a jerk. Like one of my last girlfriends. You're like, I'm gonna come. Oh, yeah. I hate you. And then you're gone.
Have you ever been in love?
Yeah.
You have? You ever been married? Okay.
Wait, listen.
Personal.
They're coming for you.
They are coming for you.
I don't talk about my private life.
John. John Lovett, you're the greatest.
But
John Lovett.
If you. Well,
are you religious? Are you an Orthodox Jew?
No, but I mean, is this what your podcast people want to hear about religion?
No. Maybe. We have all kinds of people.
You know, let me just say something about I'm Jewish. And most people do not understand that religion, including my fellow Jews. Mm. And anybody can... They go, is it a race or religion? I go, well, you can convert to it. So how could it be a race?
Right.
Because there's Jews in every country in the world. There's Chinese Jews. There's Alaskan Jews. There's a Japanese, French.
I don't know about that. Alaskan Jews? The Inuits? Have you people made it up there?
Well...
Although it's true that,
might
you know,
there's, but there's Chinese,
to be a Jew is to be adhered to a religion. It's also, though, in some ways, to be a survivor.
Well, religion means way of life. And what the Jewish religion really is about, it's about trying to do the right thing morally in any situation. And most people are like that anyway. So to my mind, I have friends who are Jewish. I go, well, you could be Jewish. But a lot of people are that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, this whole thing, I think, where anti-Semitism comes from is it says that the Jews are the chosen people, and that's what it says and everything. And that's not the story. If you look at it as opposed to a literal story, as opposed to a lesson, a fable, like Aesop's fable, where it says God went to everybody and said, do you just believe in me? Mm. And everyone said no, and the Jews said yes. And then, but the idea of God being... It's what makes something live. You know, they can create all the chemicals of a person in a lab, but they can't make it live, have life.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that? That's the thing that you're alive, the spirit of life. It's that. Let's call that, and that's in everybody, in plants, animals. And the idea of religion is that's what makes everybody, they go, God is one.
Sure.
That's how we're all connected.
That's right.
That spirit of life, and you need to respect that. So they wrote the Ten Commandments. So don't, you know,
that's exactly.
Steal, don't kill.
No, that's
don't go after your neighbor's wife.
That's the fundamental gift that the Jews, that the Judaism brought to the world, especially when you were living in not only pagan times, but the idea that we all come from the same origin, we all come from one father, which means we're all of the same moral worth. That's where
no one is worth more or less than you. And
that's it.
And the whole thing is that the spirit of life, whatever it is that makes something live, not like something in outer space, but that thing is is in everybody, and that's what makes us connected, and you need to respect everybody and do all that. That is a choice. That's the story of the chosen people, that you have to choose. And so the story is not that the Jews were chosen, it's that these group of people, whoever they were, made that choice.
Which came with responsibility.
To believe that way.
Yeah.
And if you look at Jesus Christ, who was Jewish, and his name was probably Jesus Christ, Steinbergovitz, he was a rabbi. He was preaching Judaism and what he was
saying, a simplified form of it.
Don't look to the Romans, look to yourself for right and wrong.
Right, exactly.
And the Romans want to power over people. So when you say, when you have a guy saying, no, don't look to them, look to you, mm-hmm. yourself, your inner sense of, you know what right and wrong, look to that. That's what he was basically saying. And they like going, no, we can't have. And then everyone's going to him going, what's the answer? And he's like, look to yourself. He goes, I'm exactly. not me. And so you know, they went to the Jews and said, look at, basically said, either give them up or we're going to wipe out all of you.
Right. And they were like,
what do you mean,
you know,
all
what?
Of us? Like you, your family, all Jews, right. all of a million of you, you're gone. Mm-hmm. Or however many there were.
I guess who I would have been, I would have sold them down the river too.
Well,
but you know what?
You know, if he said, where's your friend hiding, or we're going to kill you and your wife and your kids and your whole family and everybody that.
Yeah, that's.
You'd go, he's.
He's right there.
And that's when he said.
He's next to the bread box over there.
Forgive them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen.
I'm not a Jew for Jesus, but my dad said, you know, I don't believe in that other stuff, but that's not how I was raised, but I respect people's rights. But he goes, you can't argue with what he taught, because what he taught was really.
It was also simplified. You could put everything he said, you could put on a 4x4, you know, card. I mean, do unto others as you'd have them
and
do unto.
And think about
unto
it,
unto
they
you.
Didn't have 4x4 cards back then.
They didn't have 4x4. I'm talking about in the
they
sand.
They didn't have bumper stickers.
In a small plot of sand, you could write.
Or it's possible they did have the bumper stickers, but then nowhere to put them.
What would Jesus do?
Are they going to put it on a wagon?
What would Jesus do? John Lovitz, I want to thank
you. He would
you.
Go to temple.
I want to thank you for solving not only Christianity's issues, but for hailing the Jews and explaining
acting,
what Judaism and acting
Judaism.
And being the richest man in the world and being so modest.
And fantastic investment advice.
And fantastic investment advice. Buy oil.
Oil.
This has been the Brian Callen Show. Where are you going to be again?
Most Jews buy oil. Where do you think the word oi comes from?
Oil from the oil.
Oil. You know, how much did it go up? Oi.
Now, do you control Hollywood? Do you control Hollywood? You're Jewish. I mean, I would imagine. Are you the king of Hollywood?
Oh, Lord, you racist.
No! Listen, you don't control this podcast.
You know what? Let me tell you about that, okay? What happened in Hollywood was there are all these immigrants escaping, like, say, Russia or whatever. Like, my grandfather came here to the United States from Romania when he was 15 years old. Because if he would have had to join the Russian army, and then he would have been killed.
Exactly.
Because he's Jewish.
Exactly.
So a lot of these Eastern European people came to America, to New York, mm-hmm. through Ellis Island, and they weren't allowed to be in the banking. There were a lot of the Jews. They weren't
allowed
to be
allowed
in anything.
To own land,
nothing.
Yeah.
So they had these little machines. You'd put a slot in it, and you'd turn a crank, and you'd see a bunch of photos that looked like it was moving. Nickelodeons, they called them. So they said, let the Jews have that. It's a mm-hmm. gutter business. Mm-hmm. That's why the Jews got into the movie business.
And by the way, they were allowed to be like make clothing and stuff, being seamstress. That's why when they came to this country, they had a skill set. But you're absolutely right.
Well, Samuel Goldwyn, who had Metro Goldwyn, he had his own studio. Then he's part of Metro Goldwyn merged, but then he had his own studio. Mm-hmm. He was a tailor.
Yep, that was the only thing they could do. For the history of the Jews is exactly that. We just had an amazing historian who's going to come up after, he wrote a book called Bloodlands, and it was about what Hitler and Stalin did to from 33 to 45, and it includes the Holocaust. And when the Soviet archives opened up, we found out that the Jews in the East, Eastern Europe, were really the ones that bore such a brunt. You know, they were all just wiped out. They were all killed. The ones that escaped had nowhere to go but Israel and really actually the United States. So it's a powerful story about people who essentially never were kept so. And the Russian, what they call the pales, which were the ghettos, were the worst place for the Jews, because they pogrom is a Jewish is a, I believe it's a Yiddish.
It started off in Eastern Europe, but those were the persecutions, and those were happening.
And that's a Yiddish term. I think it's a German. It's a Russian term, I believe. But that was the pogrom, the purging of the Jews was, the Tsar would be like, we need somebody to blame. Let's go blame them. So
right, well, that's
that
what Hitler did after World War I. The German mark was worthless. It was this
and the
$6 trillion
to one. Quote, unquote, the Jews controlled the banking and finance, so let's blame them, et cetera, it's the old story.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the president did the same thing. It's the 1%.
Yeah, to be a Jew.
To be the scapegoat. It's Wall Street and the banks. It's like, well, who's that? Oh, the Jews. He didn't say it, but that's what he was saying.
Yeah. And that's in
Sorry.
A way a burden.
Let that be controversial. I just made your podcast go viral.
Great. We started with funny, and now we're talking about this. Well, that's what you
but
are.
The problem,
you're an eclectic
see, the problem
man.
Is when you have a group of people, and the religion is look to yourself for right and wrong, and then the people in power want power over you, and you're like, no. Mm-hmm. And that's their thing. You go, well, what do you think of what he said? And they're like, you know. Exactly. They go, don't you look to that guy for right and wrong? I'm like, no. Who do you look to? I go, I look
to myself.
Myself.
Yeah. The responsibility lies with me.
I know, if I agree with him, great. But if right.
That's but that's where innovation
and people,
comes from.
They don't, you know, they don't like it. I don't look at the president of the United States. I voted for him, but I don't look at him as my father. Or I don't
well,
need
first of all,
a father
figure. If you're a rabbi, part of your responsibility and part of your ethos is debate, is wrapped up in debate. It is not just to accept everything that the Torah says. In fact, it spurs a great deal of question and debate. They always say put a bunch of rabbis in a room and they're not going to agree on a goddamn thing. Even if there's that famous story of God kept creating miracles and they were like, yeah, but I don't know. How can we really be sure it's God?
Well, the reason they say that is, like, I have friends that are, you know, Catholics. And anyone they go, they got kicked out of a church, a Catholic school. And it's always the same reason. And now I just say to them, I know why. They go, why? I go, because you ask questions. Mm-hmm. And they go, yeah, how'd you know?
Yeah.
They go, because they keep telling me. You're not allowed to ask questions. But that's how you – and then Jews, like, they go, no, don't take it on faith. You have to understand this. Well, you have to ask questions.
Because the definition of faith is that the truth has already been arrived at. There is the problem in question has been solved already. Now the rest is up to you to just accept as gospel.
That's the Catholic
that is
definition
gospel.
Of
right.
faith.
And, you know, like I would say to you, do you want to know about acting? Ask me. Don't just say, oh, John said he's a great actor. Right. He can help me in my acting. Yes, it's true. It has that final answer has been arrived at. But don't take it on faith, Brian. Ask me questions.
John!
And I'll answer you, and then you'll finally go,
And there it is. Ladies and gentlemen, the answers lie with John Lovitz. Do you have a Twitter handle that people can tweet
yeah, at? Yeah, at Real John Lovitz. JONLOVITZ.
At Real John Lovitz.
Well, you know,
Lovitz.
I remember MySpace, which Dane Cook was graciously introduced me to, and, you know, Facebook. There's all these fake...
I know
accounts.
Yeah.
So
and you are verified at the @TheRealJohn.
Yeah. So I put real so people know it's me, and then they go, well, people could do that. So, yeah.
All right, John Lovitz will be at
verified
the,
with a check in a little
be at,
green circle,
and he'll be at Comedy Works in Denver, and I will be at once again Donnie B's in Springfield. Then I'll be at Houston, and then I'll be in Buffalo, and then I'll be in Helium in Buffalo, and then I'll be in Calgary. Wow.
Are you Jewish?
No.
But and yet you know all about
I know a lot about Jewish history.
My people.
Because I'm very, very smart. Because I'm incredibly intelligent. We'll talk off air. I've got a couple of things to say. Ladies and gentlemen, John Lovitz, the legend. One of the funniest men on the planet. John Lovitz. Thank you. Good night.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter @BrianCallen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/BrianCallenComedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.